specifically about programs that should permeate every part of that campus, through curriculum and course revision, through revamped student services, through textbook selection and revision if necessary, through new types of student activities, through increased staff awareness and staff recognition to include more women in higher level jobs, through special programs for women students that include career guidance and information about non-traditional programs. It's hard to say where one should start, and I think it's impossible to tell where the whole thing may end. Because what we're advocating and what you'll be implementing, probably over a period of years, is really a revolution. What else can we call uprooting long-established male-oriented programs? The overturning of deeply entrenched male-oriented courses? The overthrowing of male-dominated administrations. And that's why we need to concern ourselves at all with strategies for implementing programs for women, because many community college staff members, sharing what seems to me to be a relatively common human trait, resist change in general. And when the change that we're suggesting happens to involve special programs for women, that's change in specific and in a specific that can seem threatening. For a number of years, in groups such as this, I have vigorously advocated what I've chosen to call the insouciant approach to programs for women. And since, like most speakers and lots of writers, I really only have one speech. I intend today to suggest how the insouciant approach can also be useful to those of you who are trying or looking for strategies to help you to implement programs for women at your colleges. I have to give you a bit of background on this, because if we're successful, the insouciant approach, and those words are capitalized, is likely to join the Peter Principle, the Hawthorne Effect, Waterloo, Watergate, and the Alamo as part of our language. And I think a brief digression is in order to put a potentially campus-shaking movement in historical perspective, and that's what I want to give you. It all began a few years ago when a small group of women educators gathered in the bar of a well-known Phoenix landmark hotel. We gathered to chat and relax after attending a day-long conference on the status of women. And we'd heard several speakers, and we participated in group sessions concerning the need to overcome prejudice toward and discrimination against working women. As we were sitting there talking over the day's events, the conversation naturally centered on the topic we'd just heard discussed again. So we compared notes and did some quick and unofficial figuring on the back of a napkin. And as far as we could tell, the six of us belonged to a total of 37 different organizations, service clubs, commissions, or committees that had as one of their purpose the improvement of the status of women. Now, most of those groups were general in nature, but there were a few that were specialized, ones that concentrated, for instance, on improving the status of minority group women, migrant women, divorced women, unmarried mothers. We didn't count duplications. That's, you know, where more than one of us belonged to the same organization, commission, club, or committee. So after we got that startling statistic compiled, we went on to estimate that roughly among us, we'd spent 1,762 hours and 15 minutes of time during the past year attending meetings, many of them on weekends, that were concerned in some way with the same general topic. And we further determined that although some of us had been attending meetings such as this for many years, that all that seemed to have changed was the statistics cited. The problem was still very much with us. We had talked a great deal, and we had listened to others talk a great deal, but what had we accomplished? Well, here we weren't entirely unanimous in our evaluation, but the consensus was that our accomplishments ranged somewhere between nothing and very little. But we agreed on two other things at this little informal get-together. One was that we were all in so deeply already that a few more hours of time devoted to devising a plan of action might save us time in the long run. And the second thing we decided at that meeting was that we would meet the following week. Lots of times we didn't see one another for months, even though we were all involved in these same things. That we'd meet the following week, at which time each one of us would be prepared to analyze the organizations to which she belonged, with the purpose of determining why, if we could, that one important purpose that all of them had, and that was so dear to all of us, wasn't being accomplished by any of the groups. Well, as it turned out, we really needed more than one meeting to do that, but I'll spare you the blow-by-blow of all of those and give you some of the facts that we arrived at. And I think by giving just a few examples of our analytic treatment, you can get the point. Several of our members, for instance, belong to a well-known business and professional organization called the AWWA, the Association of Working Women of America. And this group represented a cross-section of working women at all skill levels, and it had many chapters, thousands across the country. It has state councils and regional directors and an active national organization, including an office in Washington with a number of salaried employees. The purposes of AWWA include the furthering of the status of women in business and the professions, the encouragement of young women who are interested in working, this is done through a scholarship program, the general cultural improvement of the members, and also includes a social purpose described as fostering good fellowship among the members. When the program of work of one chapter in our valley for the past year was looked at carefully, we determined that they'd had 18 general membership meetings during that year. 9 of them were program meetings devoted to general improvement of the members. And those programs had included one speech by the man who had just been appointed a Chamber of Commerce executive, one program on the status of women by a young man who was an assistant to the governor, one slide program by a gentleman who just returned from Africa, one book review by a local minister, one speech on historic Arizona landmarks by the public relations man of a local public utility, one speech concerning current legislative problems given by the man who was the youngest member of the House of Representatives, one talk on the narcotics problem by a new dean of boys at a local high school, one speech concerning current legislative problems given by the man who's the oldest member of the Senate, and one panel discussion entitled Jack West and Dave on State Government. Then there were 9 AWWA meetings that year that were business meetings. 3 of them were devoted to discussion of how to raise money for that year's scholarships. And they decided to sell chances on a silver service that was donated by a member. 2 were work sessions at which members made decorations for the yearly Christmas party. Two meetings were needed to formulate the resolutions and to determine the local chapter stand on questions to be discussed at the regional and national conferences. And 2 more meetings were needed for reports from the delegates to the regional and national conferences. Now, 3 of our committee members also belong to another national organization, the AAWCG, the American Association of Women College Graduates. It's more selective in its membership than AWWA, but AAWCG still has hundreds of chapters, thousands probably, with state, regional, and national organizations. And it includes among its purposes the encouragement of women who have the potential to attend college through a scholarship program, the continued cultural improvement of its own members through study groups and educational program meetings, and the encouragement of efforts to improve the status of women. And one chapter of AAWCG in our valley had three study groups last year. One was studying the status of women. Another was discussing current events with emphasis on the changing mores of students in American colleges. And the third was concerned with pollution problems. In addition, there were seven general membership meetings that were held on Saturdays throughout the year. And their programs included a lecture demonstration on the evolution of rock and roll music by a young man from the local university, a lecture on problems in law and order by a local police chief, a lecture by a retired baseball umpire, that one on the importance of sports as a deterrent to juvenile delinquency, a demonstration by a folk dance club from a local retirement community, a lecture on the status of women by a young man who had just completed a doctoral dissertation on the subject, a movie made by two young men who had received a grant from a foundation to underwrite the production that was entitled A Day in the Life of a Roadrunner. And the seventh, and this was their most important meeting of the year, it was one at which awards were made to two outstanding Arizona women of the year. And this program was also used as a money-raising venture. Other local organizations were invited to nominate candidates, and tickets to the awards banquet were sold. The dinner was usually very well attended, and a committee of three men, usually executives from education, a local bank, and a local industry, served as judges and made the award presentation. Well, it turned out that each of the six members of our group belonged to one of the local women's professional service organizations in the valley. Now, each of these groups had very similar purposes, which included the improvement of the status of women in the professions, a contribution to some charitable organization in the community, the encouraging of young women to enter the professions and to aspire to executive positions. This is done through sponsoring subsidiary clubs for young women and through scholarship programs. And a social purpose, again described as fostering, this time continuing, good fellowship among the membership. There was an interesting point about these service organizations. They competed quite vigorously, sometimes almost viciously, for members. But they did recognize their similarity of purpose, and many years before had formed a local council to avoid conflicts in carrying out their major money-raising projects for the year. And this council, which was formed in the years before every organization's name was shortened to its initials, has the unfortunate title of the Council of Ladies of Selfless Endeavor, which is frequently irreverently referred to by our local press as the LOSE Council. One of these service clubs met weekly for lunch for 10 months out of the year, weekly. And it had two business and two program meetings each month. A sampling of its programs, again, included a talk by a school district public relations man on the forthcoming bond issue, a musical program by the University String Quartet, a lecture by the junior college football coach on the importance of athletics as a deterrent to juvenile delinquency, a talk on narcotics by a local police chief, a slide presentation by a young man recently hired as promoter for a new convention center, a speech entitled Women Return to College by the distinguished-looking gentleman who was new president of the local community college, and so on. The business meetings, which, like the program meetings, were 20 minutes long, were taken up with discussions on ways and means, briefings to and reports from delegates to regional and national meetings, and so on. Our group analyzed a lot of other organizations, too. LOVE, the Ladies Organization for Volunteer Effort, the League for Furthering Feminine Participation in the Democratic Process, and a lot of others. But the pattern which we were able to identify is already apparent by those that I've illustrated for you. We found that when improving the status of women was one purpose of a multi-purpose organization, it was subordinated to other purposes because the others were so much easier to accomplish. As difficult as fundraising always is, at least it's a concrete thing. It's not nebulous like improving status. And when you have money raised, you can encourage young women through scholarships. The fact that you may be encouraging them to aspire to positions they can't get until status is improved doesn't seem to be considered. And everyone's too busy selling tickets or candy or cooking favorite dishes for the yearly potluck supper to further continuing good fellowship among the members if they don't get around to it. And we further concluded that the program supposedly scheduled to fulfill the improving the general cultural knowledge of the membership purpose of all of these organizations were most frequently a potpourri of unrelated tidbits presented predominantly by men. And it was at this point that our group decided on an action program. And since it was sort of a conspiracy, we conceived of it as a secret action program. We invited 5 additional trusted friends to join us, since we felt that 11, besides having all kinds of mystical qualities, was the number we needed to carry out our action plan. It was very simple. We were going to infiltrate. Each of our 11 group members pledged to do what she could within the organization she already belonged to. And the objective was very simple. We infiltrated the program committees. And since most groups find that getting members to work on a program committee is second in difficulty only to getting them to work on fundraising committees, it really wasn't very difficult. 4 or 5, I think it was, of our members made it onto program committees almost immediately by replacing dropouts. And 4 more were named program chairwomen for their organizations for the next year. And we've got 2 or 3 that will probably beyond the committees, although they won't share them. We got three of our members who joined new clubs in order to fill out the representation in all of the larger women's organizations in town. Now, once she's in charge of arranging programs for a group or a member of the program committee, the committee member is charged with adopting what we've called the insouciant approach. Now, this involves adopting a naive and innocent approach, and it's taken some practice for some of us. In fact, we've really found, and I think this is good for some of you to think of, we found that training some of our organization's youngest members is most effective. Some of them still really have a naive and innocent attitude toward their opportunities to get ahead in the world of work, and they don't have to slough off all of that cynical veneer that some of the rest of us do. In addition, we've held 2 weekend workshops to develop insouciant techniques for all of us to use. Now, I know that probably some of you will want to know more than I can possibly tell you today about the insouciant approach, and I can refer you to my forthcoming workbook on the subject. It's called Insouciance in Programming for Women's Organizations, Case Studies and Critical Incidents. But the approach works this way, and you can adapt it to your own uses. Once you've set up the program calendar, and you've decided on the theme or the types of programs you want for that year, remember, we've infiltrated these committees. And they're left pretty much alone to do the planning. You can ask for suggestions, but you seldom get them in the whole group. Then your telephone committee goes into action. I'll give you an example. Let's suppose you've decided that you want to invite a group of representatives from a local industry to form a panel to discuss a given subject. You can call, say, the personnel manager at a large local plant, and you explain that your meeting's on a certain date and a certain topic, and that you'd like to have the names of several of his firm's top women executives so that you can contact them as possible speakers. On the other hand, one of our members got a good deal of activity going when she called one local business office of a large firm and started out with a switchboard operator. She asked to speak to the woman vice president, or was it the chairwoman of the board? She really couldn't quite remember, but surely the operator would know who she meant. And her call created quite a stir, and she eventually worked her way up through all the minor executives to a vice president male. Well, this member, by the way, is the one who conducts our workshops. Two of our members, when they got in the swing of this, reported delightful and very enlightening conversations that they had with local school superintendents when they called to ask the names of four or five women administrators whom they might call on for programs. And we had two community college presidents and one university official who really provided a lot of laughs for one of our group meetings. They began to provide the names of five or six women department chairpersons who could speak on the panel. We had several state and federal agencies that I think are convinced that there's a movement afoot to accuse them of something. They've gotten five or six people who've called their directors in the last few weeks, and each of them has assumed that that gentleman could provide women speakers from their supervisory ranks. Last I heard, one of those gentlemen wasn't taking his phone calls, and the other one was using up his accumulated vacation time. Our most recent insouciant venture has been to develop a speakers bureau, and we've notified all of the local men's service clubs of our roster of distinguished women speakers who are available for their programs next year. Some of the topics include the role of men in the world of work. Effective techniques for combining marriage and a career. That one is subtitled, "You Can Still Be a Good Father, Though Working." How to Beat the Paternal Guilt Complex. Helping Working Fathers Adjust. Special Needs of Male Employees. Retreading the Working Male, and so on. Insouciance obviously has to be a very adaptable technique. And because our group has learned to work with it and adapt it to various situations, we've noticed several interesting trends in the Valley. One of them, the programs at our organization's meetings next year have taken on a new and interesting diversity. For instance, one local firm who was pressed for a woman speaker from the supervisory ranks finally suggested its chief filing clerk, whose title we found later has been changed to filing supervisor. She is a delightful person and has a great sense of humor, and she's going to address one of the clubs this next year on the topic of how to make or break your boss through filing. Some of you can attest to the truth of that. Some businesses who've had what we call token women on their staffs are reportedly rethinking their positions. You know, token women are been those who've been given the titles without real responsibility or salaries, equivalent to men's. They've been there to point to when anyone was questioning hiring and advancement policies. But as the impact of this insouciant approach has been felt around the city this spring, we've noticed some changes. For instance, there's one woman whose title was administrative assistant to a business executive. This was a title without salary. She was really his highly skilled secretary. But she's scheduled to speak at so many meetings next year that there's some thought, we understand, that they'll move her into community relations position. By scheduling women speakers who are members of our own groups or others on the infiltrated list, our new programming techniques created some other problems in the local business community. Our program committees have worked up a good publicity campaign, and our members have suddenly leaped into prominence in the local press. We're looking forward to more of an impact there next year. Well, several men who previously spent at least half their company time making speeches have, we understand, had to adjust their workloads this last year. Two members of women's service clubs have found they enjoy public speaking so much they plan to run for the state legislature next year. And three others learned so much about their local school districts while they were trying to locate speakers that they decided to run for the school boards in their areas. Several of our local groups already report that this new type of programming, particularly the use of their own members as speakers, particularly has helped them to fulfill that fostering good fellowship among the members purpose so well that they've been able to cancel several of the social events they usually held for that purpose. This has given them more time to spend on their other goals and has led the membership to feeling a much greater feeling of accomplishment. And, you know, one specific that we were very excited about, the local AAWCG has decided that it will ask women who are former recipients of the Woman of the Year Award to act as judges next year and make the award. I'm sure that many of you have pointed out to women students that they can do a great deal to solve their own problems in the world of work if only they'll change their attitudes and see themselves in a broader sphere. That's really what the Insouciant approach is all about as far as programming for women's organizations is concerned. Now, how does it specifically apply to you and your situation and your problem, your immediate goal, your long-range goals concerning women's programs and their implementation? I think first and maybe the most important thing is that the IA can help you by helping you to maintain a sense of humor. It's like using a rapier rather than a broadsword. And when you're operating, as most of you will be, at least for the foreseeable future, I think, from a very narrow base of power rather than a broad one, you're confronting, and when you're confronting representatives of that broad base of power who need to be convinced, who may make you angry by their lack of awareness, by their attempts to patronize you, by their crude attempts at jokes on the subject of women's programs, by obtuseness and insensitivity that could blow your minds and your cool, you need a sense of humor. And the second way that I think the Insouciant approach can help is through taking the adversary, whoever he or she may be, off guard. An administrator with whom you've made an appointment, for instance, to discuss programs for women may very well tend to be on guard or on defensive. If you use the IA on that person to soften up the defenses, you're then ready to use other strategies. And like any battle that's well planned, your assault on those entrenched forces has to be fought with lots of ammunition in reserve. Before that metaphor gets out of hand, I'll give you some specific example. Let's say, for instance, that you are all on the staff of Corinthian Community College. A CCC is a comprehensive community college with an open door policy, which is located wherever you want it to be. You and a few other concerned staff members feel that there's a need for programs for women in your service area. And you know that there are at least hundreds and perhaps thousands of women out there who need Corinthian. You feel that there are many potential students who are afraid to come to campus, or who have come to campus and have been rebuffed, or who have never heard of Corinthian at all. And you believe that CCC should make an effort to reach and to serve those women. You believe that an open door isn't enough if large numbers of students never come close enough to see the buildings, much less the door. So you could approach a key administrator with a carefully stated argument concerning the needs of women and the responsibility of Corinthian to meet those needs. All of this, of course, in terms of the high moral commitment of the institution. But you won't. Not, that is, unless you've decided to spend your life fighting this battle. Administrators frequently enjoy, as do all of us, spending some time discussing philosophical points concerning community colleges. But if your purpose is to get some action soon, you need an action proposal, and the sooner the better. I think of myself as an administrator for many years as being generally supportive of innovative ideas and as being eager to help to implement new programs. But I'm busy, and I like someone to spell out